Are you the daughter of a narcissist? Well, if you are, welcome to the club. I am a daughter of a narcissistic mom, and the struggles that daughters of narcissistic mothers have, they bring through their life until they heal the wounds. My guest today is the author of Adult Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers, Stephanie Kreisberg. She is a psychologist in Massachusetts that has written a really helpful book. You'll hear what I love about it in a second, but we have these embedded messages of unlovability, inadequacy, and we internalize that we aren't, valuable. We struggle with setting boundaries with people because we simply weren't allowed as a child. So my name is Tracy Malone. Let's go listen to Stephanie and all of her wisdom that she's going to share with us about being the daughter of a narcissistic mother, what we can do, and some of the hurdles to make changes in our life. So let's go meet Stephanie. Welcome back, Stephanie. I am so excited to have you back.
Well, thank you, Tracy. I'm so excited to be here, and thank you so much for having me on your program.
Well, I took your book, which for those who are watching on YouTube, I'm holding up, Adult Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers. Quiet the critical voices in your head, heal self-doubt, and learn. Live the life you deserve, right?
It's a mouthful.
It is, but it is, I loved it. I literally sat there and I just kept highlighting things and I made memes from it. It was so inspiring. And as the daughter of a narcissist, I've read a lot of books on narcissistic moms, but you always learn something different. And what I learned from your book, and I love the way you took like a narrative. This was a case study, if you would. Reflected upon it, and you went, and this is what that means, and this means, and it was like so many aha moments. So bless you for doing this, because I know it's a lot of work, but it came out amazing.
Well, thank you so much. It was a lot of work, and I really appreciate those kind words.
Yes, well, I want all of YouTube land to know that I love it, and I highly recommend it to people who do have narcissistic moms. So let's start off with, like, how does someone know that they have a narcissistic mother? Because of course there's ones that have known their whole life and they're crazy and they know it. And then there's others that don't really know the signs. What would they be looking for?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And often, as you may know from your work, often women come into therapy, or what they really start with is how they feel about themselves, right? More so than necessarily their mother. They may be struggling with self-doubt, second-guessing themselves, not feeling good about themselves, just not really knowing who they are in life. And that may perhaps lead them to therapy or just trying to figure out what's going on. And then they may look at their relationship with their mother, and they may have had a mother who was very self-involved. Everything revolved around her. Perhaps she had a really big personality, or perhaps she was very more quiet, but very dependent on her daughter. It was a role reversal to take care of her. Lacked empathy was probably the number one thing. This daughter, this woman, never felt understood, that her mother saw her, understood, validated her emotions. Also critical, perhaps competitive with her, perhaps jealous of her, which is one of the most, I think, awful things. And I would also add, felt that she just was invisible and unseen.
And I relate to every one of those, and we could build a checklist twice as long and I would still relate to them. But an amazing outline. And one of the things you said, you talked about, was the no empathy. And my narc mother is passed now, but for her last year of her life, I flew her from the East Coast to Connecticut, to Colorado. And I became her permanent caregiver. every single day. And I bought her special cookies and I did everything she wanted. And I moved her water glass and I did this and I did that, right? So I'm like her personal slave. And all of the nurses loved me. And I was going in for surgery. I was having cancer removed from my forehead. And mm-hmm. It was a pretty big 26 stitches. My face was swollen. My eyes were closed. I was on painkillers. And I called my mom and I had told her the day before. I got her everything she needed in the room and then said, I'm going to be not here for a few days. And I called her, or maybe she actually, I think she called without even remembering that I had had surgery that day. And she was like, but I need cookies. I need these special cookies. And I'm mm-hmm. like, yeah, I have like my eyes are closed. People had to drive me. And, you know, I'm on painkillers. I can't get you cookies. And she was so angry. Like it wasn't mm-hmm. angry about the stupid cookies when literally there were 9 boxes in her drawer. But mm-hmm. empathy was like, you can't be sick. You're not, mm-hmm. you have to take care of me. How could you be sick? And mm-hmm. little skin cancer, get over it kind of a thing. And the shock of how no empathy when I had been her day maid all day, all every single day. And I just needed 2 days to recover from surgery and she had no empathy. It mm-hmm. was just a show, like right there, like I've seen it my whole life, but like, really now, yeah. And I don't even need you to do anything for me. I need to not have to serve you for 2 days, the day off.
Mm-hmm. So there you are, the lack of empathy, the role reversal. And I think every daughter of a narcissist mother can relate to that. And I think what you also highlight with that story, it's a very, your mother's response is very childlike, right? Where are my cookies? I mean, to say the least. And that's really what a narcissist is at heart, a child in an adult's body. They are a person who's never grown up inside. They are psychologically, emotionally immature. You are dealing with a child. And you would expect that response perhaps from a child. Exactly. You know, where are my cookies? But not from an adult, let alone your own mother.
And one you've been caring for. So, but it really, when you see these things, when you actually live them and you have mm-hmm. to describe them, because I know many people like myself grew up thinking my family was crazy. Mm-hmm. I thought I wasn't loved. I knew I wasn't, but I never went, oh, I'm not loved. I just went on and went my own way. But mm-hmm. many do not even know that it was abusive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's right. I was talking about that with somebody today. It's like, and you know, her feeling was, I just grew up this way. I thought it was normal. And it's like a fish doesn't know what water is because that's what they swim in all the time. That sense of feeling that I don't count, my needs don't count, I am not important. That is just, that is what you take into adulthood with you, that feeling.
Absolutely. And, you know, when people do the work, do you also find this? Because when my clients come to me, they come to me because they're going through a divorce or a relationship breakup with a narcissist. Mm-hmm. And so many, like once we start talking, there's a connection to a parent. There's mm-hmm. their past to this pattern has been there. Do you find that as well?
Oh, yes, you know, absolutely. Because, you know, when you grow up with a narcissistic parent, you grow up feeling like my needs don't count. I am not important. Difficulty setting boundaries. You feel invisible. And so, you know, you are easily then sort of I think really anybody can be a target for a narcissist, you know, in that kind of charm and gaslighting and love bombing. But I think especially if you have a narcissistic parent, it's easy to feel like I'm just there to take care of somebody else and my needs don't count. Rather than perhaps noticing a red flag of, you know, this person is treating me really poorly because that is what you're used to.
And it's normalized, right? It literally becomes, you know, I always would say, and this has been a family joke for 40 years, was mm-hmm. was our family vacation. Like I mm-hmm. thought that was normal. So when a guy would do it to me, I was mm-hmm. like, oh, I'll be back. That's just part of, mm-hmm. part of the thing. I didn't know the word ghosting then. Mm-hmm. Like nobody talking to anyone for 2 months. Well, that was part of life. That was part of the yeah. dynamic. So again, we don't see it and we don't put the words to it until one day they pick up your book and they learn about it and they go, oh gosh, this is what I've been going through. So, you know, in your book, you speculated, and I thought this is an important fact to bring up. You said, we're not alone. There are 7.6 million female narcissists in the world. And I'm going to take a multiplier on that, because in my book, I took the number of narcissists in the world or in the United States, and I said, they didn't just hurt one victim, right? Even if they only hurt two victims, that's 15 million victims, right? And it's not that they just hurt one victim. We're talking about a mother child that also affects people at work, their neighbors, their family. So the amount of destruction, it's almost tenfold if you think about the different people that they will affect and mess up over their life.
Well, that's true. And then that trauma gets handed down within families. There's a lot of work now on what we call intergenerational trauma, and how the trauma can get handed down from generation to generation to generation, you know, what someone experienced. So it's so important, the work that you're doing to bring this to light and kind of stop these patterns in their tracks.
Yeah. So again, this is what we need. Your book, a more awareness, and videos on YouTube where people are finding finally the truth. You know, there's been blogs, there's been books out there for years, but YouTube has really opened up like a people to go, I need an answer. How do I change an electric switch? Let's go to YouTube, right? How do I help this crazy mess? Boom, they find the videos and the answers are starting to come. I think that the awareness is getting better than any years ago.
I think that for exactly the reasons you said, you know, books, Facebook, YouTube. Yes, I think people definitely can get more information at their fingertips. And I think that's really important, because one of the biggest problems for daughters of narcissistic mothers or anyone involved with a narcissist is feelings of shame. There's something wrong with me. I must be the problem. But now you can, you know, go and start to find out some more information and say, huh, maybe this isn't all about me. Maybe I'm not just the screw up here. And that is, can break the isolation that people who are in relationships with narcissists, you know, they start to get into. They start to get really isolated.
Yeah, thank you. The what you just said, like, triggered me to write this down. But like, what happens with a parent is these recordings, if you would, these thoughts have that are programming, in another way of putting it, right? You're not good enough. You'll never be successful. You'll better marry well, because you're going to be nothing, you know, and that kind of negative, you're not smart enough, you're not pretty enough, you'll never do well. When you've in your head ruminating from childhood, it makes sense that you don't have that great self-esteem, because got that somewhere laying in the back that, I'm not good enough, I can't do anything. How does someone get rid of those thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, I find a number of things are really helpful. The first one, which is what we're doing right now, is education, is really finding out what happened to me. This is because of the messages I got from my mother, or, you know, from another narcissist in my life. And this is what narcissists are like. This is what they do to people. This wasn't because of me and who I was. This is their, you know, this is their MO. And really starting to learn about that is very freeing. That's one thing that's very freeing for people. Yet still that tape can play. So some of the key things are learning, one, you know, we hear about this a lot, but it's very helpful. Mindfulness, learning to be aware of your thoughts in the present moment, as opposed to just having them spin. Learning that paradoxically, we cannot control our thoughts. The job isn't to, you know, press the pause button, like on your, you know, iPad, to notice them and just let them pass. You're not at fault for having them. So in other words, in a nutshell, to change your relationship with your thoughts and to have compassion, self-compassion, which we talk about a lot these days, is one of the most important things you can do with your critical voice instead of blaming yourself for the thoughts.
Yeah, very nice. I also tell people to really know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Understand yourself so that when those thoughts come, again, my own father said, nobody's going to read a book you read. You never even wrote a term paper, you know, mm-hmm. and I ruminated and I was like, I can't put it out there because no one's going to read it because that just stopped mm-hmm. me. And the truth was, I had to really sit down and go, well, Tracy, you've been writing 2,000 pages on your website. You've got eBooks. You got this. People do care what you have to say. They watch your videos. Mm-hmm. The truth was, he was the jerk, and he was the one that was insecure, maybe about the exposure that it would have caused him had he not been dead by then, right? Mm-hmm. But still, his way of going, don't embarrass me,
mm-hmm.
side. But then I would turn on and look at this stuff and go, no, mm-hmm. you've always built yourself. You've done everything. You've self-taught. You've done this. You've done this. You should be proud of yourself and stop mm-hmm. those recordings.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so part of that is just what you said, is taking small steps or maybe big steps, but you actually have to then take steps to go out and try something new. Sometimes I call them experiments, whatever it might be. It might just be, if you don't feel confident, just smiling at somebody at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. If that's what you need to start with, if you feel like, you know, nobody would want to, you know, be friends with me. Just that small step might be what you start with, whatever you need to do.
Absolutely. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about was sort of the roles in families.
Mm-hmm.
Scapegoat, the golden child, the rebel, the forgotten. Mm-hmm. Is there a specific role that narcissistic mothers like to target? Is it that they create the golden child, and like if the golden child does what they want them to do, they get to stay in that role? Or do they fluctuate with these kind of roles? Are they treat them differently, obviously, but mm-hmm. Is there one where the almost who was the golden first, and then the, or is you get the golden role because you obeyed your mother?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think like a lot of things, you know, it really depends. Mm-hmm. Let's say you have a, what we call, you know, a covert narcissistic mother who's needy and dependent and needs her child to take care of her. You know, she might need a child, a daughter who's not that successful, right? Who she kind of grooms to be almost, you know, to stay home and take care of her, okay? So that might really be her favorite. Or if she's a grandiose narcissistic mother who thinks that she's the most important person in the world and therefore her child has to be the most successful, her favorite might be the golden child. Right. So I think it really depends mm-hmm. on the type of person, the type of narcissistic parent, or even where she is at a certain stage in her life. I think it's also important to remember that narcissists like to pit people against each other. So that might happen also.
Right. And also, I think it depends on her needs. Again, like you said, if she needs someone to take care of her son, her, then she's going to want the one that nurtures and can caregive her, versus mm-hmm. if she wants someone to go down to the yacht club and tell them how wonderful, successful her daughter is, then that one becomes the one she talks about and presents to the world, because that mm-hmm. gives her clout, right? Even though the woman is sitting there, you know, taking care of her full time, she'll probably go out and more highlight the one that makes her look good in the eyes of the world.
Right, exactly. And I think another thing is, and this is what can be really crazy making, is that narcissistic people do what we call splitting, right? Where they're going to want to divide people up, divide family members up. You know, healthy parents want their families to be close and connected, but narcissists prefer people to be separate and against each other. So they might be one day you're going to be on top, one day you're going to be on top, because that way you're going to be against each other, if I'm pitting you against each other.
Absolutely. And sort of that separation, you know, that you know, tactic to really divide you. And it leaves all of the siblings in a very awkward place, because you're trained to hate your sister or your other siblings, right? And so it breaks up the whole family. It is, and you know, in many ways we know that they're doing it because it's the flavor of the day. But child that was once the golden that has now been demoted, of course that child now tries harder. Let me get back up to that place where I'm the golden. So they try harder, and then this one starts to slip because they went back to their normal patterns, and you get to be the golden, and then you get to be the golden, right? And that cognitive dissonance of, you know, well I was great yesterday, I didn't do anything different, why am I pond scum now, right? So the very confusing mind, especially when you're young and a child, to see, you know, mommy loved me yesterday and today she doesn't, and it's confusing.
Right. And then that affects your sense of self, and you bring that out into the world, and your sense of, well, who can I really trust? Can I really trust people, even if that's not really conscious, right? And making more, you know, healthy relationships as you go out into the world.
Again, another vulnerability of us being daughters of is we bring that baggage. We bring thoughts into our relationship. So again, if we're with a healthy person, you know, we're not going to have to experience the same kind of things. But so many daughters of narcissists do end up repeating the patterns. So it's so familiar. We just fall back into that box. And, you know, it wasn't like that in the beginning, but now it's normal, and it's kind of what we're used to, so we stay. And it's a terrible cycle, and we have to break it for our children.
You know, and sometimes I will say I do see that in families where there's narcissism, siblings will stay connected. They sort of bond together, and, you know, safety in numbers, and that is a really great thing, but not always.
Yeah, we were totally divided. We were divided and conquer, and, you know, it just didn't end well. One of the things that my family did and was, they created almost a story to mask, right? The mask was, we were XYZ, you know, I literally had we grew up in Westport, Connecticut. We had a house on the water. We had Martha Stewart over for dinner all the time, blah, 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 blah. That's what I was trained to say. Not they were abusive and would leave us home for a month at age 12, you know, they did A, B, and C, because those you're not allowed to talk about. So this story of, you know, normalcy, right? Story of, hey, we're perfectly fine, nothing to look at, you know, everyone loves each other here. It, again, a place where victims get really confused. I believed that story. I held on to that story. And when I would question it and say, well, Teresa's parents don't do that, or they let her go to camp, or whatever I would, you know, argue with, it would be, don't ever talk to me about your friend. We're not them. You know, and it was attack. And so you learn to shut up and not ask questions.
And it sounds to me like you're talking about, Tracy, of elements of gaslighting, right? Which is, you know, denying your reality. But in my opinion, I write about it in the book, it's not just denying your reality, it's denying your feelings and emotions, right? Your emotional reality. You're saying, I would like to go to camp, that's important to me. And they're saying, you know, that doesn't matter, your feelings don't matter, right? But you know your feelings matter, right? They're your reality. And that to me is another and a really dangerous form of gaslighting, because you grow up then feeling like, do my feelings matter? Do I even have feelings? Do I even know what my feelings are? Which is one of, I think, the key things that daughters of narcissistic mothers experience, which is, I don't even know what I feel.
This past year, and this is you know, 62 years later, I have been like working really hard to know who I am. But I saw, again, accommodating, people pleasing, you know, if they wanted, say, a boyfriend, husband wanted to go to this vacation, okay, sure, that sounds like fun, you know, not realizing I hated it. I would come back, I'd had a terrible time, and just wasn't good for me. But I just said, okay, that was a bad trip. I didn't go, you know what, I don't like a trip that I run around and do too much. I need to have downtime. So learning how is helping me to see from everything, from what do I like to watch on TV? What do I not like to eat? And that sounds so stupid for a daughter of a narcissist at 62 to be going, I don't know what I like. But it was more than that, as I looked and studied something like, what do I like and what are my favorite things, right? I just got back from Mexico and I ate at the Italian restaurant 5 nights.
Right? All right.
That's my favorite. And I got to have every entree, one night, different things, right? It was perfect. And that's who I am. But I also hate fish. I'm actually allergic to fish. But both my husband and many men in my life have always gone, here, taste this fish. It's different. It's you've never had it this way. Try it this way. And I would go, oh, okay. And I would literally gag and choke it down. But now I have so much more self-confidence to go, you know what? I don't like fish and I don't care how the hell they cooked it. No, I would have the strength because I have that knowledge about who I am and how I like things and what I don't like. And so daughters of narcissists tend to be much more accommodating. And that's why I would stick that piece of fish in my mouth, gag it down because I was required to, because in my house I was required to. So now I'm like, nope, that's not me. Thank you anyway. And I feel much more confident.
Right. I mean, you're really talking about boundaries, right? And what is a boundary other than, you know, what is the most important? What am I going to put in my body and not put in my body, right? Or put in my mouth. And I don't want to put fish in my mouth. And so I don't have to, you know, that if that isn't a basic right, I don't know what is, right? And you're saying, no, I don't have to eat what I don't want to eat. And that's what daughters of narcissistic mothers struggle with in all sorts of ways, right?
Yeah. And again, the more time, and you know, narcissism happens on a spectrum. We know that. Everybody hits and yells and kicks and punches, but they could be verbally abusive. They can be just belittling. They could be constant. It could be not that often, but if you screw up, then the evil one comes out, right? So there's ones that have it every day, every minute, and they're stuck in it. They're controlled by them. So it's such a variant to where people are, how much of these, I call them fleas, that you've adopted. You know, Tracy doesn't even know what she likes. There was a movie that someone had me watch recently. It was called Runaway Bride.
I saw that a long time ago. Julia Roberts, right?
And she was married and or engaged and ran away at the altar like 6 times. But Richard Gere comes in and starts to report and interview the ex-fiancés. Like, oh, she likes hard boiled like me. Oh, she likes sunny side up just like me. She likes this just like me. And in the end, Richard Gere was like, so what kind of eggs do you want? And she's like, what do you like? And she was ready to adopt Richard Gere's kind of eggs, right? And then and she lined up all the eggs and she came to him and she's like, this is my favorite. Like she had just been molding herself to what they wanted her to be. Because she didn't actually know, I don't like fish, I'm not eating it, just like I did, right? That's why I did the fish thing, was to sit there because of that movie. I was like, you know what? I'm going to really figure out what I like and I don't like because I don't want to be forced to eat a piece of fish because this one's different.
That is so interesting. I am going to go back and rewatch that movie. And I think that that is just so... That is such a good example. And it may be, you know, I am going to be a lawyer, even though I really want to be a dancer, or I will do the swim team, even though I hate sports. And I just really want to be, you know, in the art club, or, you know, just you cannot be yourself. You are not seen for who you are when you were growing up. And no wonder. Or it might be you don't want to eat the fish at dinner. You don't like fish. It just might be a subtle did. Right? It may be, and I think that's an important point. It may just be a series of subtle digs that just are caustic and hurtful that make you doubt yourself.
And like, you know, even something like, I'll use the example of my fish thing. My parents lived in Maine. Do you know how much we paid for these lobsters? Guilt, shame, you know, we bought it for you. You didn't want it, but we bought it, so you better eat it, right? So sort of that, you know, subtle, and again, almost forcing me. There were many times I was forced to eat the fish, which is probably why I don't like fish, right? But at the same time, now I know, and people who are watching this, as subtle and stupid as this example is compared to thousands of examples that really help people in your book, I want people to see that it's not always this giant thing. It could just be the fish. It could you know, that you don't have confidence to, you know, go out and dance on the dance floor because your whole life you were told you look like a monkey, don't do that, don't embarrass me, or something, messages that can come out and literally limit your life if you are afraid. Maybe I like dancing, I don't know, but if I was told I was bad at anything, like this, I better do it or I'm getting in trouble. It's easier to give in and surrender. And when we learn that, we take that into our next relationship. Okay, they want to do football every Saturday. Okay, I'll just surrender because fighting with them doesn't work, right? Knowing you have the independence to go, you know what, partner, you want to watch football? I'm going to be over here and I'll, you know, water my plants and do what I want instead of having the lack of confidence to go, okay, I'll watch football, you know?
Right, because who I am is okay. And you got the message early on in your emotional brain that it's okay to be who I am and to speak up and to have a voice. And that's one of, you know, the goals of my book is to help women figure out, oh, it's okay to have my voice. I can find my own voice.
Yeah, find it, keep it, and never let it go. It.
Yes, because that's what you don't have when you're raised by a narcissistic mother. You know, you do not have a voice. And if you don't have it when you're growing up, it does not come easily as an adult.
It's an uncomfortable thing. And that's why going to someone like yourself, working with someone who understands it and can point out, oh, that's a behavior. Is that learned? Oh, you know, how do we unpack that? It's a key to healing. It's the beginning, right? And your book helped so many people. And I'm going to hold it up again. Adult daughters of mothers, we will put the link in the show tunes below. Stephanie, is there something that I missed that you wanted to tell people today?
Well, thank you for asking. I just want, you know, women to know, and your work does this, that they are not alone. Most women come into my practice just saying, you know, I just feel like something's wrong with me. I feel alone. And you're not alone. You are not the only one out there struggling with this, and you can find help and things can get better. You really can change, no matter if you're 26 or 76, you know, you can feel better.
Yeah. And again, I love the time age limit there, because people are like, oh God, I'm 50. I can't recover. I can't move on. It's like, no. You've got plenty of life to change, break the patterns, and start to enjoy your life your way. Eat the way you want. Do what you want with your life and without guilt. Because a lot of times these things invoke guilt in us, right? The parents are telling us all these things. So if we go, oh, I want to do this, we feel terrible because we're almost in defiance of them.
That's right. But you can learn to live a life without guilt, without shame, without self-doubt. And you know, and I see it, and it's, I see these transformations and people finding strength and confidence, and it's a beautiful thing.
It really is. Thank you so much for the work that you do. I know you are an amazing psychologist, and everyone is blessed to have you. So thank you for the book.
Thank you.
Get out there. Go. If you have a narcissistic mother, go out there and purchase her book. We'll put the link below. Again, I took it on my vacation and I couldn't stop watching it. I couldn't stop reading it. And, you know, if I could, I don't even know if I could hold up. Sometimes I had a highlighter, sometimes I had a pen, so it's not as easy to hold it up and show you the highlighting, but everything's highlighted. It was brilliant, and it's going to get you on your way to healing.
Oh, thank you so much, Tracy. And thank you for the work you do. And thank you for inviting me on your, you know, wonderful podcast or YouTube channel. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Well, I hope you liked that. Isn't she great? I just love her. This is the second interview I've done with her, and this book is going to change your life. I loved those stories. And then she would analyze the story, and this is what they're feeling, and this is what they're doing. And it just puts the pieces together, because we all have stories like that. You're going to see stories that you can relate to. But when someone's processing it for you, as she does with each one of these situations, you'll start to see the light in your own life, your own story, and you could start to heal. The link to her book is going to be down below. If you are struggling with a narcissistic mother, you can visit my website, narcissistabusesupport.com. We've got lots of free resources and lots of information, a free ebook on narcissistic parents. So let's get you some help, and don't give up. You know what? Go and find yourself like I did. It is the most fascinating thing to figure out what you like and what you don't like. And that might make me sound stupid, but that's what I was groomed to do. And so I adapted to other people's. No more fish. So this is Tracy Malone. Thank you so much. If you've enjoyed the video, please like it or subscribe to the channel. I'll see you again soon.